James Duthie will join us here in just a moment. We got Dear Hazy B later in the hour. My understanding is they're filtering in, filtering through the grapplers on the case, and you're going to have a bunch of them to direct my way, our way. Noodles will chime in. You're going to have chimes yourself. You're going to have
it's
things to
greasy,
say.
Some greasy stuff, Hazy, where like just guys' trips and all of a sudden significant others are like it's just guys not like finding their golf balls where it's never found, or saying you're a 4 handicap and you're shooting 110. It's like, what's going on out there?
Yeah, you got to get the handicap figured out, man.
I do. That's the one thing about golf I would never understand. Like, is there actually guys that just have to say they're a 5 handicap because they're in love with that idea, but they actually go out to the golf course and get clubbed every time and they hand out money?
Absolutely.
How could you want to do that?
It's a vanity cap. It's a vanity cap. That's what
then
it's
explain
called.
That to me. They just like the idea of going into golf town and talking to Rick with the mustache and they say, I'm a 5? Or what is it?
Well, like, you know this. There is a distinction between a single digit and a double digit. If you're a single digit cap, you can play golf. Right, like that doesn't mean you're on the tour. It doesn't mean what, but it means you can play. Like if you're a single digit, you can legitimately shoot in the 70s, certainly in the low 80s. You're not going to ever shoot over 100 or anything like that. If you're playing from,
if you're a single digit, it should never be over 84.
No, I mean it can be. Like, listen, I'm a single digit. It can happen, believe me. And if you're playing a tough track or whatever, but if you're playing from the appropriate tees. And you're feeling good.
You're keeping it in the ballpark, and you're hitting some shots where somebody
exactly.
Like, man, that was damn good.
You walk away saying, that guy knows how to play golf, like for sure. So that's the vanity in it. It's single digit. It's or close to it. But it's silly because if you're playing for money, man, you're swimming with sharks.
I know, but do they
like,
not
you got to have your cap dialed in. You have to.
Do you not? Do they not? The people that do this, and I don't know. I'm not aware
I've seen
of
it. It's a donation. Is what it is.
But it's a donation, and do they not understand that the two or three guys you're playing with, they either get in their cart or they get in their car, and they drive off, and they say, as if that guy's a 4 or a 5. Like, that's embarrassing.
All the time, man. All the time. Like, if you're playing...
That smile seems like you play with. Like, you know, you're familiar
well,
with one.
Listen, I love the guys I play with, my buddies. They're sharks, too. Like, they got their numbers dialed in. It's not, you know.
Oh, so you're saying they're out in a Tuesday afternoon with nobody around and they got to type in a 97 or something.
No, I'm saying the opposite. I'm saying their numbers are, like, there's no funny business. I'm saying they play to their number. Like, that's my point, is if it's an 8, they play to an 8. If it's a 12, they play to a 12, right? If you're a 20, take it. Like, that's the thing. Like, you take the strokes because the guy who's a 3 is going to roast you. If you think you're a 12 and you're a 20, like if you're giving yourself, if you can get one more stroke because the whatever you put into the Golf Canada app pushes your number up, do it. Like, I'm not saying be shady. That's greasy. Don't put in bogus rounds or something like that. I'm saying have your cap dialed in.
I never thought a grown ass man with like a job and a family or anything like that would actually care to say somebody. Yeah, I'm a 4 handicap.
Oh, you see it all the time. All the time. Because
what?
If you're a golfer and it's a source of pride to say, oh, I'm about a 10. Like, that's generally what it is. I think I'm a 10. Like, if you don't keep track, not everyone. Most people, I think, don't keep track of their handicap. If you're just a casual golfer, why would you? You're just out having a good time, whatever. But if you're in tournaments, if you're in, like, a club, if you're playing for money, you've got to have your... You got to have your cap dialed in. You have to, because you're costing yourself. You're going to lose money. Like, the handicap system is there for a reason. My cap is dialed in. I could step on a course right now with Scottie Scheffler and play him legitimately. Now, he'll crush me. He'll shoot a 65, but if I shoot an 80 and I'm getting 15, do the math, right? Like, he's a plus 7 and I'm an 8. Like, that's the whole purpose of the handicapping system, is it doesn't matter how good you are or how bad you are.
I honestly can't believe that, like, look, you're a prime example. You got a great job. You got a wonderful family. and you would have to go to a barbecue and tell some guy that you're a 3 handicap when you're actually a 13?
Right, I don't
like,
know.
Like, what kind of garbage life are you living that you need a... I can't even believe there's a term for it, vanity cap.
It's like, listen, guys are... It's not the only thing we lie about in terms of numbers, right? Guys are always coming up with numbers. But they're like, I'm telling you, it's, you know... Yeah. And like that's the nature of the beast, man. Guys are proud. They all want to tell everyone, this is what I shoot, this is what I do, this is what I look like. It doesn't mean it's truthful, but
it's not the best. Everyone lies.
Everyone lies. Just a little bit. Just a little bit. But anyway, there was a little taste of Dear Hazy B, I guess. Right? Because that was a question I think someone was asking about, like, vanity caps and costing money on the course, and can't have it, man. And I don't advocate for cap manipulation either. That's greasy. If you should be playing off like a 10, but you're a 14 because you sneak in rounds that don't exist, that's not cool either. Because then you're going to
go the other way. What do you think Duthie's cap is? What do you think Duthie's cap is?
I think Duthie, I don't know. I'd say his index is probably around a 7.
He's
seven
a 12,
and a
I bet. No. He automatically 10. He's the guy that we're talking about. He's a 10. Men.
Possibly. All right, let's bring him in. James Duthie is joining us now. He's in studio. Do you want to be truthful about your current golf handicap, or do you want to do a lot of people do an issue out of vanity cap?
No, mine is very pure. 9.6 I just looked at, although...
Oh, that's a guy that doesn't want to say 10 or over.
I don't make up the number. I put in the little things, and there it comes up, okay?
Right. Yeah, the Golf Canada.
Now, Jimmy, we were talking about it, Jimmy. Do you know guys, and I can't believe this is a thing, they tell people at a barbecue they're like a 3 or 4 handicap, and they're going out there and ripping off a 97, or like... Do you know nonsense like that?
I may have witnessed it over the past couple of days, at least one.
Name names.
No. I may have played against one who I think was down as a 3 and was more like a 12 or something like that. But it's so funny how you have these polar extremes, right? You have the guys that are... I really haven't done a lot of the match stuff at various courses. I've just kind of done it over the last couple of years. I don't love that stuff. But so I've witnessed the guy who's the 21 cap who shoots an 81 and you lose your match on the 10th hole. Mm-hmm. I've witnessed that. And I've also seen the other thing. I'm not going to name names because I really like the guy. The guy I play with sometimes at one of my courses I play at, who is... he is the biggest protector I've ever seen.
Dave Poulin.
He will
protector,
you know,
of what?
If he of his cap, like he's got like, I don't know, maybe a 5 index, and if he has a 30-footer for bogey, he's just picking up every single time.
Yeah, see,
it's almost like the guy who picks up out of the bunker and declares a par and then shoots 65. It's along those lines.
That's just not beneficial, though. Like, I get it from a vanity standpoint. I understand it. You want a lower cap so that you can, you know, promote the lower cap and be proud of that. But if you're actually playing for something, you are going to get squeezed by the other guy who actually has his cap dialed in because he's playing to that number. Mm-hmm. And, like, it doesn't benefit you at all telling some guy around a barbecue and then going out there and getting roasted.
I think a lot of it is simple as finishing out holes, though. Because a lot of the guys that have the high caps putt everything in.
Right.
And I think that people don't realize how many putts inside 3 feet, 3.5 feet that they are going to miss. And, I'm guilty of that playing with my buddies, too, is picking up 4-footers. If somebody says it's good, you're probably going to pick it up. And then you get to your club championships where you have to make everything, and guys miss, you know, half a dozen inside 4 feet. And that's a big difference.
And that's
difference
a part of the
vanity
cap, too, where it's like, oh, I can't take more than 6, so I guess that's just the 6. But if you actually played it out, you might make a 9, 10, 11, 12.
But that's kind of that's the thing I don't really get about the system, and it saves me a lot. Like, I don't think I'm as good as that cap number, especially if you watch me play this week. I was horrific. But if this you know, only being able to take a double or whatever when I would have made like a 12 is it kind of the system protects you a little bit in itself, right?
Right.
Because a handicap is supposed to be the best of you. It's not supposed to be, like, if you're a 10 cap, that doesn't mean you're going to shoot 83 every day. It means the best of you should be that.
Right, with the occasional 79 or 80 or what have you. But that is a great point you make. A lot of it is, I'll take that with a four-footer, and then you get into the real stuff.
All the time.
Like, you got to putt that out, man. And
that could be four strokes around on gimmies,
And it can be that close. But, like, I've witnessed one recently where I asked a guy his cap, and he told me, I was like, wow, that's pretty good. I wasn't expecting that. You've been really dialed in lately. And then we got out there on the course, and it was nothing short of outrageous, what I was witnessing. outrageous.
Can you guys tell me stories? I want to know, like, flying everywhere or what?
Every direction. We're talking 180s off the tee. We're talking finding stuff. It was absolutely outrageous.
Yeah.
And anyway, it doesn't matter. It doesn't hurt anybody.
But can you guys tell? You
move on with your life. It's all good.
Can you guys tell if somebody's lying about it? Like, if you watch somebody and they're like, yeah, I'm a 6, and you're like, that guy's a 20 every day of the week. Like,
right.
Dude, one swing on the first tee, I can probably tell you what the guy's number is.
No, there's gritty little guys like me. You know I have an ugly swing. I'm a little gritty out there. So in a couple of the matches I played yesterday, if you were playing with me the first time, I'm sure the opponents thought this guy's like a 16. He's not a 9.6 index or whatever, because I was riding 2 hours sleep and was just awful. So guys do have awful rounds, but you're right. For the most part, if you play 18 holes with someone, you'll get a pretty decent idea of where they are.
You should, for sure. All right, so the cup is in the building tonight.
By the way, just one last thing on that topic. Yes. Over at Coppenwood yesterday, playing the member guest, a lot of buzz about the Brian Hayes game. A lot of buzz. A buzz from members that I didn't know who were approaching me to talk about the quality of the Brian Hayes game. So I just thought I needed to get that out there.
Thank you, James. I'm planting seeds everywhere I go, so it's good to know that they're blossoming behind me.
Told the story about O65 and the picking up out of the bunker, and there was widespread disdain.
Dude, if you ask the guys I played with, I missed a 5-footer for 64, by the way.
People.
I hit it right down the middle, and a tractor just eats my golf ball right in front of me.
People couldn't believe it.
And at a member guest at a place like that, James, you know it would have been, sorry, man, you're getting an X.
Yeah, they felt it was an aberration of the rules along the lines of Patrick.
Well, there's dignity at that course, and I can't speak for other courses. But
picking up out of the bunker.
Yeah, sorry, back to hockey.
Anyway. The cup is in the building tonight. Do you expect it to be handed out? Where are you leaning?
You know, I this question I know we're supposed to answer, and I've gone back and forth all day. I guess I do. I think I felt like watching the game the other night that was Tampa's last stand. The way they played in the first, that it was just all out, and it kind of, after that first period, kind of went the other way. Not the entire game, but for a large part of the game, and certainly in overtime. And so that's just the way I felt, but I mean, you'd be an idiot to completely rule them out. But I just think if you just count, you know, we had a piece of video O was doing the other night that I don't think ever aired for a variety of reasons. I shouldn't tell inside jokes on the air. Of all the guys limping off the ice over the last two games, right? That started with Nick Paul and Bogosian and
Cernak.
Yeah, Cernak and Kucherov, and one after the other. And I just think, look, I know both sides are hurt, Cirelli, but I just think at some point you might just run out of healthy bodies that can beat a formidable opponent. And so I think that's the way it'll be tonight, but you know, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm going to be really surprised if it goes back to Tampa for Game 6. I think the goaltending remains the number one sort of X factor, that if Kemper lets in a couple of softies and Vasi stands on his head again, then all of a sudden everything shifts, you know, going back to Game 6, where all the questions about Colorado will come into play again, and it might be a different story, but I think they probably win tonight.
Yeah, you know, Noodles, you phrased it earlier, like, is this almost a must-win, figuratively speaking, for Colorado, right?
I just feel like, you know, JD, you just brought up, like, if Tampa wins tonight, chances are Vasilevsky stood on his head, and they've gotten to Kemper somehow. So now all of a sudden the whispers of, like, well, Kemper, can he get it done? Because we already know that Vasilevsky can. He's got a track record. So it's... I think it gets back to Tampa. If it goes Game 6, it's probably going Game 7. So then that's a coin flip. So you know, they've got three opportunities to win, but I think the best one, do it tonight so you don't have to worry about the what-ifs.
I just think with Colorado, I don't know. I think it's a very easy thing for us to say that if it goes back to Game 6, it's likely going to Game 7. I'm not so sure that's the case. I still think Game 6 is a 50-50 toss-up, and maybe if they lose tonight, it's a bit of a wake-up call for them. So I just think with three opportunities that it's too big a hole. Like, it's 35-1, right? The teams with the 3-1 lead, and it was only those 42 Leafs, which we refer to all the time as the only team to ever come back. And those numbers are like that for a reason, I think.
Yeah. Well, I just, if there's a team that could do it, it'd probably be Tampa.
It would be this one for sure.
Yeah, but I think it's just too much. The hill might be just too big to climb.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, Carl, it feels like the majority of the conversation has actually been directed towards Tampa. Like, I wonder if Colorado's got a chip on their shoulder almost. Like, everyone's talking about the dynasty and the three Cubs and, wow, Vasilevsky and Kemper sucks. He can't possibly do it. Like, if they beat this team in five, think about what they've accomplished. They would have lost three games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
16-3. Like, yeah. That's just an incredible run. And they deserve the respect anyway, but you won't be able to avoid it if they find a way to win tonight.
If you're right, if they win tonight, it's this team and, I guess, to me, the 2012 LA Kings that had the most dominant playoff runs of the Cap era, right? I mean, even though Chicago won all those cups, and somebody would look it up and maybe prove me wrong on the records, but it seemed like Chicago had some really tough series in there. That Kings team in 2012 that was just unbeatable the entire way, and this Colorado team feel to me like the most dominant runs that we've seen over the last two decades.
Yeah. It's been a great run. In terms of the coaching carousel, we saw that Barry Trotz not accepting the job in Winnipeg, and I guess that means he's not accepting it anywhere else, like Dreg's reporting that he's going to take a step back. And I mean, Winnipeg can't be the only team disappointed. There must have been a bunch of teams in on Trotz. That's a big fish that's deciding to stay out of the water.
I don't remember a fan base feeling the blow of a coach not taking the job since maybe the whole Babcock Buffalo thing when he whatever his wife or whatever, and he ended up in Toronto. That was a huge blow to the Sabres, and I felt like just listening and reading what the Winnipeg fans were saying today on social media, that was a body blow to the Jets. Because I think they thought this was happening and that he was the ticket to a turnaround. And now they look and they go, wow, this coach didn't want our team. We're probably not that good, and maybe the season's going to be a disaster. So,
and you missed out on probably two or three other guys in the courting process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So do you think that was what it was? I mean, we don't have a direct answer from Trotz, but do you think he looked at the team? Or could it have been, hey, it's too close to home, the market, you know, he's from Dauphin, Manitoba, but maybe he doesn't want to go home. You know, maybe it was like,
we have no idea.
Saying no.
And I hate even making conjecture, but I would think it was the team. And that's not a huge shot at the Jets. You know, they've been a competitive team for a long time now, but I kind of think the same thing of Paul Maurice, that in the middle of the season, he just looked at this and said, you know, he took it sort of selfishly and said, selflessly, and said, I don't think I can take these guys anymore. They need a new voice, which is probably true to an extent. But I think he also probably looked at it and said, you know, if he looked at that dressing room and said, I can go to a cup final, then he's probably not walking away. I think he watched that team night in and night out for the first half of the season and said, we can't do anything more. And you know, maybe Barry Trotz looked at it and said the same thing. I don't know.
Well, I mean, who would you rather have today on paper? Winnipeg Jets or the New York Islanders? I don't think it's close.
No, you'd want the Jets.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even close.
Sure. Yeah, for sure.
And Trotz,
I might have said the same thing a different thing a year ago, but because the Islanders were so spunky in the playoffs for those 2 years, Noodles, but how much of that was the Trotz effect, I don't know.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, Barry Trotz, I'm perplexed that there aren't teams that have coaches already that are going, I'm bringing him in as an associate right now, because all this guy does is deliver playoff round wins, like flat out.
Like, but he's probably not taking that, is he? I mean, he's taking a big-time head coaching job or nothing, right?
It wouldn't surprise me if he's got his eye on maybe a team and go, I'll wait 2-3 months to see if they stub their toe.
Could it be a team that happens to live within, you know, a couple kilometers of where
12,
we are
12
right
kilometers
now?
From us? I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised. That doesn't mean he's got any insight, but if your trots, you know. Listen, Sheldon Keefe, if this team comes out slow, I don't think Keefe's got a shot. And understandably so. I mean, Babcock was given, the first year Babcock got here, it was a blow-up tank year. And then he was given 2.5 years and he was gone. Keefe's been here for three. He'll be moving in, or basically 2.5. Like,
you're taking a chance. You're taking a chance if you have your eyes on one job. But let's say you have your eyes on two or three that you would really like. The way the National Hockey League works right now, you have a 50-50 shot that one of those three will make a change. It's maybe not 50-50, but it feels high, right? That if you want to wait 8 months or something like that, that something is going to go wrong in one of those places, because generally they're teams that you like that have high expectations, and one of them is likely going to disappoint.
I believe John Cooper is the longest standing coach in the league right now, and Jared Bednar is like third or something.
Right.
Like, it feels like Bednar got the job 3 weeks
ago. Don't you feel like Jared Bednar, like 2 years ago, was the least known coach in the league?
Yes.
Like, if you were in a bar with your buddies and you went around saying, name the coaches in the league, that everybody would have the most problem with Colorado. And now, look at him. Looks like $1 million behind the bench every night, and he's one win away from hoisting the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I mean, I worked with Jared in Calgary Flames organization. Like, you knew that he was going to be a good coach. Like, he was an assistant coach to Jimmy Playfair in Abbotsford, and he's worked his way up. If he wins tonight, his resume, he's won at every level. Insane. In every level. He's a great guy. He's a great communicator. He holds guys accountable. But the one thing is, there was a time where they had 47 points, and Patrick Roy quit on that team, a week before the season? Mm-hmm. And Bednar got that team kind of by default. He was coaching their minor league team, and all he's done is helped build that group and grown with them. But it wasn't that long ago that team was a 47-point team. Remember, we didn't know the name of their GM. It was Sherman. Remember?
Oh, remember that?
Greg Sherman. Patrick Roy and Joe Sakic were there, but actually their GM was Greg Sherman.
Told him, like, you're not the GM anymore, but you can take your office downstairs. Like, it was kind of, I forgot about that story.
Doesn't Bednar just look now like an NHL coach, though? You know, he's kind of a good-looking guy behind the bench, big guy. He just looks like an NHL coach.
Kind of
like, O-Dog at the Prospects game, where he just looked like he belonged there.
That's very true.
And that was a good look.
And winners. And winners.
Well, champions, really.
He should wear Al's brother's hat tonight behind a bench. That would really, I think, be a good omen.
Hey, I got to, before I know you, if you probably got to get out of here, I got to ask you guys a question, because I bring my personal life onto the show because you guys are dear friends and I care about you. Mm-hmm. Who's in the wrong last night? I took my wife's charger because I couldn't find my charger. And then she was mad at me, so she went out and bought another charger. So when I got in bed last night, she said I could have her charger, and she threw it at me violently from the bathroom and hit me right in the head. And I have a welt on my head now that Alicia, the wonderful makeup artist, has covered up, so you probably can't see it on the TSN4 or wherever you're watching now, but... Does she have a right to violently injure me with the charger? I don't know that she meant to. She just chucked it across the room.
Well, what you should have said is that's a Pebble Beach golf trip, or I bring this to public. Like, I go public.
I go public. Well, I guess I have gone public with it.
Now you've ruined your leverage. Now the leverage is gone. You can go to Don Valley.
Yeah. And honestly, you shouldn't have taken her charger. Like, don't lose your
charger. It is a grease.
And then she called me a baby because I kind of rolled around on the bed and was like, oh.
Did you drop? You tried to sell a penalty?
I was like lying, on my back, and I kind of rolled over and buried my head in the pillow like I might have to go to the hospital. I thought I would get a little sympathy, and she just, like, scoffed and laughed.
Yeah. No, that's an aggressive reaction, I will say that, but...
Yeah.
No, Chargers, she didn't throw it with intent to injure. She was just chucking me the charger, but she's got a really good arm, apparently.
Chargers, man, it's like jail time rules when it comes to that kind of property. Like, you can't mess with someone's charger.
Hey, wait till you have, like, three kids with phones in your house, like three basically adult kids, and they just go they go missing every day.
We have a charging station at the house.
It's Mad Max beyond Thunderdome in there every single day.
Just battles over who took it, where it is, why it's gone.
And everybody denies. Yeah. It's just pure denial. Like, the kids are like, must have been the dog.
Yeah, prison rules. Prison rules. Don't admit to anything, right? Don't admit to anything and just live to see another day when it comes to finding that charger. Yeah, I think you're probably both in the wrong, James. So
thank you.
Yeah. You're not going to Pebble.
I'll take half.
Sorry, man. Okay. All right, buddy. Good seeing you.
Okay, boys.
Here's James Duffy.